Welcome to the Sparks by Ignium podcast, a series of intimate conversations shared to give people the help and the hope they need to take the next steps in scaling up their business.
Welcome to the Sparks by Ignium podcast. I'm Phil Rose, the host of the show, and today I'm delighted to be joined by David Braithwaite. Now, David and I had not met until 2 weeks ago, but we realized we've got a lot in common. And that thing in common is, we're going to talk about it, in fact, I'm not going to give it away, around how we coach individuals. But what David has is a story here about how he got into where he is today. And he's not a coach by background, but what he does is coaching, and he does it in a unique way. He's the owner of Citrus Financial. He works as a strategic coach. He has a conveyancing practice and a healthcare business. And that's the intriguing piece for me. How does anybody juggle four balls and also a family and keep himself fit and healthy at the same time? So, David, welcome to the Sparks by Ignium podcast.
And thank you very much for having me, Phil. Yeah, it's great. And I'm glad that we're meeting again, because we had a great conversation before that people didn't hear or see. So I'm looking forward to carrying on the conversation with you.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I'll try and look surprised, as I did last time when you told me what you told me about where we the relationship and how that works together. Because I think that was an intriguing part. I wish I could capture that on camera in hindsight. So I stumbled on my words as I introduced you there, partly because when I was trying to get out the fact that you run four businesses. I think I'll just go back to the question is, you know, who is David and how would you describe yourself?
David is somebody that was rubbish at school, didn't know what he wanted to do. A lot of my friends had these clear trajectories of, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and I'm going to become a solicitor. And I'm looking at them going, what? Yeah. I didn't know what I wanted to be, what I wanted to do. But I enjoyed very early on learning how to probably make money for myself and find my way through life, in that if you want something, go out there and maybe earn the money and find a way to get it yourself. And that's what I started doing. So at one point, I remember when I was much younger, I had a paper round during the week. I worked in a school kitchen in the morning. Then at 11 o'clock, I finished at the kitchen and I started a shift at a local electrical shop at 11. So I had to get on my bike and cycle as fast as I could to get there so I didn't miss being late. It was crazy, but I knew that if I wanted to get, at the time, you know, the car or get a bigger bike or something, it was down to me to try and fund it. And I think that's where I got my taste of running your own business, albeit I didn't know quite what it was. To me at the time, it was, how much money can I earn? Am I saving up for a car or getting the next bit of hi-fi or whatever it is that you wanted? But I knew it was down to me. So that's who David is. And I fell into initially sort of financial services, mainly because I had various jobs, but I worked for a bank at one point. And the bank that I worked for was in this very narrow sort of shopping precinct in Maidstone town centre. And I remember I got sat in the desk by the window, and people would come in and see me and have a chat with me and then come back to use me for various things. And it was because they liked me and they think I explained things clearly and everything, which was lovely, except for the fact there was another bank opposite. And it's a very narrow precinct, so I could read all their posters in the window. So when they're sitting in front of me to open a savings account or to do a mortgage with me, I want to tell them, actually, go over the road, it's cheaper there. But I couldn't tell them that. So it felt very restrictive because I was representing that bank. So I thought, I just want to have a way that I can tell people, look, if I was you, knowing what I know, go and do this. So I wanted the freedom to do that. So hence why the financial services started. Then from there, everything sort of followed, really, along the way. So, I've got that. That's the main business that I've got. But the others sort of followed as a natural progression, really. And then strategic coach was in the mix as well somewhere. So it's certainly been exciting and never a dull moment, Phil.
But which is running your own business. I love the bit you said, though, you know, finding your own way through life. And the second bit you said there was, it's down to me. Mm. You know, there's the realization there as a young David that actually nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody's going to hand you on a plate. You've got to get out there and do something. And I think that's a really interesting thing, isn't it? I'm talking to a number of friends at the moment. It's just in conversation. You know, we're all in our 50s, some older, some younger. You know, we've all got, as we grow up, we end up with friends 20 years older and 20 years younger. That makes And some are thinking about retirement. And it's really interesting, those conversations we have around, what are you going to do? When are you going to do it? I've got one friend who works on an oil company, and he spent his last 30 years working around the world. I remember the day he joined that oil company, because he was at my house as a 23-year-old. He's now coming at 53, 54. He's looking at retiring at 55. Mm. What's he going to do? you know, and he's got the pension to do it. But he's been employed by this one individual company for this whole of his life. Whereas you and I have been out and done different things. And there's no right or wrong on that. I'm not making any judgment around that. But I think it's really interesting when you realize it's down to me to do it.
And you it certainly wasn't down to my qualifications, I can tell you that, you know, because I didn't really get many. So it was very much, but yeah, there is these two economies that we've got. We've got the people that set up their own business and are happy to risk it all if you want. And you've got the other people that prefer the safety. Yeah. And it's the people that are running their own business need the people that are like the safety to be working in that business with them to provide that kind of balance. Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with either. It's just different. I think a lot of my employed friends probably couldn't see themselves doing this in a million years.
No, of course.
But equally, I think that when you run your own business, you become unemployable. So you know, because you've done it your way for so long, it'd be very hard to have someone telling you what to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I think there's a big thing around that, actually. You know, about when you do sell your business. And I realized that actually I set up my business 19 years and 10 months ago, because I set up in the beginning of April 2004. So this time 20 years ago, I was working my last few weeks of notice before I left the business. And it was a strange time, but you know, that was the last time I was employed by an organization. Last time I got a paycheck in at the end of the month, which had some money on it.
Hi there. If you're enjoying this episode of Sparks, please take a moment to hit subscribe wherever you're listening. It really helps us out. Thanks.
Really interesting. You and I were just talking beforehand about, you know, some of the links we've got, and we're going to come on to that with regards to strategic coach. And I think it's really interesting in terms of when I was having my paycheck coming in. I was a payday salary, and I can't remember what it was now, but I, you know, I was paid an amount, and every month I got that money deposited in my bank account. It was lovely.
Yep.
And then I set up on my own in April 2004, and I had no money deposited in my bank account the following month. And it's quite a strange thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and you have to try and temper that with the satisfaction, supposedly, that you've got now that you're the master of your own destiny, and you've taken that risk, and you've crossed that boundary from that world that you were in into the world that you're now in. And yeah, it's down to you, and it's down to us. All the people that are out there running their own businesses can really understand those other people running their own businesses like no other person. I always remember thinking it was ironic that you'd go and see maybe your local bank manager to go and talk about getting a business loan. What the heck does he know about business? Because he's working for the bank, right? So what's the credibility there? And I always thought that was a very strange situation to be in. Yeah. But I think people do like that, you know, the self-employed people, the entrepreneurs, the business owners, I think we're all mavericks, really. And it makes us more interesting, and certainly it's a challenge, but that's kind of what we do. We like having problems and solving them and finding solutions to people that we have around us, and actually adding value to what it is that the people are wanting from our services, whether that's financial coaching or cars, whatever it is that we do, we're offering something of value to the marketplace, and then we get paid in return for that value. So what we get paid is directly proportional to the value that we add.
So
that's the good news, but it's also the bad news, isn't it? Because if you're not offering good enough value, you might not earn the money.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, isn't it? And you know, one of the things that struck me as I grow my business is, you know, you do have an irregular income, and it comes in fits and starts, but you have the ability to earn what you want. The sky is the limit, really. And it's down to your ambition and down to your drive. But one thing that strikes me about you, David, you've got four businesses. You've got your Citrus Financial, you've got your conveyancing business, you've got a healthcare practice, and you're a strategic coach.
Yep.
So I'd love to delve into how does one man run the four businesses? Now, as a coach, I know a lot of the answers to that, but also I still find it intriguing how you get all those balls in the air. And as I said in the intro, and juggle a family life. Yep. And you and I talked about sport and fitness earlier as well. So how do you get that in balance in your life and go to sleep at night?
It's not easy, is the first thing I would say. And that was why I came to Strategic Coach, because I was just running the financial services business. And as you say, if you want to earn more money, a lot of people think, well, if I want to do twice the turnover, I've got to work twice the hours. But actually, that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
So what Strategic Coach is about is creating what they call a self-managing company. So what you have when you start off in your own business, you were setting up your business. You wrote your business plan probably. And for a lot of people, they go, right, off we go now and we start. And the revenue starts coming in. And it's very hard to say no to people because it's money. And you think, oh, I don't know where it's going to lead to. And we're nice people generally. We want to make sure we're looking after everybody. And you get spread quite thin. Now, for me, the timing was that my son's 14 now. So it was 14 years ago. In 2009, I joined Coach because I was finding that I had this situation where I was working all the hours that I possibly could. I was on these so-called smartphones, which aren't very smart because they follow you everywhere. And I was thinking, right, crikey, we're expecting our child here. I want to be a dad that's around for this. And this isn't working. And what happened was I found that I had a business that I'd had and I created my own company and it was all great. And from the outside looking in, everyone thinks, oh, he's got his own business. It must be great. But I felt on the inside, this is like I've got a job because it's not a business unless you can walk away from it and it still runs. A business is, to me, is like a bit like a machine. You can walk away and have other people run it. You don't have to always be involved in it. So I am heavily involved in the financial services company still because I love the work that I do and I still go and see clients for various things. However, the actual healthcare company, I have probably about an hour's Zoom call with them once a quarter and same with the conveyancing practice. That's it.
Wow.
They are literally self-managing companies. So the people that are in them run them for me and there's a team of people there that do it. But my day-to-day is more limited, should we say, to probably mentoring and just bouncing ideas off about things. So I have a role to play and I co-own the business with the people that are there, but I'm not involved in the day-to-day. So what I haven't done is created myself another job. I've created myself another business and there's a massive difference in there. But you've got to have the structures in place to make that happen. Which is where I didn't have that in 2009. And I remember at the time thinking, crikey, no, I can't work any more hours. And you get the emails coming through that you feel that you have to answer and holidays are things that you feel that you get to the point where I am so tired, I'm going to kill myself if I don't actually have a holiday and I so deserve one. And we take holidays that way around often rather than, right, let's plan the holidays and the business around those because this stuff that you got with your family and your children and your friends and your loved ones, you know, it's like there was an analogy I heard the other day that I loved, which was by Jesse Itzler. I think it was Jesse Itzler. And he had a sand timer. And he said, what's happening is every day is a grain of sand's going through, whether you like it or not. The sand timer is moving.
Yeah.
So, and when you think about your life like that, and Jesse Itzler was saying about how he was talking about his parents in context, he said, when you look at how old maybe your parents are, and you think, okay, so my dad this year is 84, and this sounds awful, but you think, well, how much longer have we all got? And then you put it into how many summers that you might have. Now, my son's 14. Wow. He's maybe going to university or further education when he's 18, perhaps. I've got 4 more summers left.
Wow.
Because probably, and he might well have holidays with us, but it's never going to be the same as what we've got in this kind of sweet spot. So it's about priorities. So I needed to make sure that I had really got my life sorted. And as I alluded to at the beginning, my school education, I didn't come out with much in terms of qualifications, but what they never teach you at school is, right, okay, there's this career path, you can do careers. What about if one of your careers is running your own company? Well, how does that work then? Yeah, you know, what is profit? What is loss? What is, how do you recruit people the right way? Mm-hmm. What do you do to take yourself in terms of marketing? All the stuff that probably should be a whole subject in itself, and I'm sure it will be.
Yeah.
Most of the, I say kids, I'm not saying everyone younger, but anyone younger than me is a kid. They're learning a lot from YouTube, TikTok, and podcasts now, but that wasn't around when we were at school.
Yeah.
You know, it was a case of, well, you want to set your own business up. What were you going to be, a plumber or something? It had to be a trade. Mm-hmm. It wasn't often doing something entrepreneurial.
I think,
you know, you had to learn. I had to unlearn all the bad habits that I had and try and get some good ones in. And that's what Strategic Coach did for me, was to unravel and unpick the knot that I'd created and gradually give that sense of freedom and create a business again and not give me a job.
It's really interesting as I hear you say that, because I'm just reflecting on that over my, you know, I said it's almost 20 years I set up my first business. And And interestingly, I set up my first business in April 2004 because my youngest daughter was 18 months old. No, she wasn't. She was 16 months old at that time. And I thought, I know what? Let's not be employed. Let's not have a full-time salary. Let's go and do it on my own because then I can have a lifestyle. I can go and see my daughter and, you know, take part in the childcare. And you know, and any new business owner knows that doesn't happen the way you plan it to do because it's much harder and it's not all roses. You know, you can't just get up and go to the gym in the morning and then look after your child. You've got to make money as well.
Yeah.
But the key I remember that is, and I've still got it on my bookshelf across there. I've still got the E-Myth Revisited by Michael E. Gerber sitting on my bookshelf.
I've got it over there.
Well, interesting. I've got two copies actually, because I'll tell you a story. My first accountant, Angela, before I set up my business, she was my wife's accountant. Before I set up my business, she gave me this book and said, before you set up the business, read this. And I had it on the bookshelf and I read bits of it. And then in about 2008, my friend Walter arranged for Michael Gerber to come to the UK. And I met him and he signed the second book. That's why I've got two on the shelf there.
Yeah.
But I still got the recording of Michael Gerber talking at that time about the E-Myth. And I think the key is that, you know, that entrepreneurial myth and the fact that as me, as an entrepreneur, I was looking at going into a business and I was looking at setting an electronics business with importing products, with creating a business that would enable me to have the time I needed. But I soon found out that doesn't happen in that same way. I was a naive entrepreneur. I tried to do it all myself. I tried to be the who, as you and I, sorry, I had to be the how, as you and I will talk about in a minute. Because, I, you know, from my perspective, it was all about, you know, how do I make it work? How do I do all these things? And for me, it became a lot of work. And interestingly, you started Strategic Coach in 2009. I made a big transition then as well, because that was the beginning of that recession. There was a lot of stuff going on at that stage for all of us in terms of the world, the financial crisis we had to contend with. So interestingly, what was the thing that made you think I need to do something different? What was it that you said, things got to change?
So there was one particular
holiday.
There's two things that I'll share with you. So the first thing was, as you rightly say, you set up your own business because you want to have freedom over your time and be able to take the holidays you want and not have to fill in a form. You want freedom over your money, so you earn what you want, how you want to do it. Freedom over your relationships, so who you're going to be talking with, who you're going to spend your time with, and then freedom over your purpose. Okay, so it's four things: time, money, relationship, purpose. Those are four freedoms. You go, that's how it's going to be. And then reality hits and it's like, oh, I can't take the time that, oh, I've got to do that. Or you're on the beach and you're talking to people. So there's two things. So my dad, as I mentioned, he's heading on to his mid-80s. He was a prolific golfer, loved golf. So one of the things I was able to do was to go out and play golf with him during the week, which was great. And then there was this one time where we're going around having this round of golf and my phone kept ringing because it was just me in the business at the time. Mobile kept ringing, taking calls. And I looked over. So I'm standing there on the golf course trying to think, what can I do? Looked over at my dad and he didn't know, and he still doesn't know to this day, unless he listens to this, that this happened. He was looking down at the ground and he was just shaking his head. And it's one of those things. It wasn't that he was angry. He was disappointed. And we know that's worse, right? He was just disappointed. I remember thinking, oh, he's come out to play golf with his son and I'm there, but I'm not present. And that's not right. So that was one of the first things that actually happened. And it made me feel kind of a bit yucky inside that in some way I'd missold this idea of a game of golf to my dad. And it wasn't, I wasn't really there. So you spend the rest of the time trying to make it up and try and, you know, try and fit it all in. So that was the first thing. The second thing is I'm a financial planner, right? I was the person that was paying the most amount into his pension. Now, the reason for that was because that was my escape plan. I wanted to get the most into my pension so that I'd get out as quickly as I could. And that scared me. It's like, this can't be right. Why should I be actually trying to wish my life away? And yet this was this holy grail that I wanted, which was having my own company. And yet here I am trying to get out of it as quick as I can.
Wow.
I thought, this can't be right. So I had to change a couple of things. And it was started with unraveling, as I said, going back to basics and having to face some truths, really, and going, right, this is what's the truth? You know, all progress starts by telling the truth, we say at Strategic Coach. And it's true. Once you kind of lay it all down and go, this has got to change. And at the time, you know, in 2009, I was, you know, 14 years younger than I am now. It's like, what was I thinking? Trying to pay the most into a pension just to get out.
Yeah.
But that was what I was doing. I was building myself an escape hatch 1 month at a time. And that was a real wake up call.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that, you know, I had an emotional reaction when you said about your dad on the golf course there. And it feels quite emotional me saying this now, because I think about my parents. My parents retired in 2010. I say retired. They sold their business, and they sold it for the value of the tools in the workshop. And I look at that and think, you know, they set up their business in 1981, roughly. You know, so they had a good run at it, but it was hard work. Our holidays were spent, you know, in the UK, camping around the UK, which is great. I know, I love that. But Dad would have to go and find a phone box, because we didn't have mobile phones then. So Dad would go and find a phone box to ring into the office to check everything was okay.
Yeah.
And there were a few holidays which got cancelled because Dad was working on something, and he was the engineer. He was a brilliant engineer. He still is. You know, he's only 79. A brilliant engineer. He loves doing things himself. And I think the thing is, he loves doing things himself. And I think that was what his business was about. So my mom worked in the business as well. You know, she was one side of the business. He was the dirty engineering side of it. She was the clean office side of it. You know, it was an office of engineers. But I think from when you said that, I was thinking, if I could go back and give my dad some advice, it's around, you know, how do you find other ways to make it work? You know, he didn't have the phone ringing on the golf course because he didn't have a phone like that. But it was still the same situation of having to make the business work and being there all the time and having to juggle all the balls to do it. So I had a sense there of not from your dad's perspective, but from my perspective, looking at my dad and saying, if only I could go back 40 years and just do a bit of conversation there and say, how can we make this better? How can we change the lifestyle? And how can we make the business, you use that word just now, you know, in terms of self-managing company, how can we make your business self-managing so you could take holiday? That's the key.
It is. Yeah. And it's, for me, it was about having the right people around me that can do it. I mean, fairly during lockdown, I did a couple of scary hires. It's probably fair to say. So took on a COO being one of them.
Okay.
And he effectively runs the business for me day to day. And there is nothing better you can hear than when he first started, he said, what you need to do is this, this, and this. I'm taking it off your desk. It was like, oh, thank goodness for that. Because I'm best off going off and seeing more clients and doing what I do and doing these sort of things than I am. He loves a spreadsheet, right? I can't stand a spreadsheet. I don't even know how you use Excel. He's all over it. He built systems so we can report on the figures, all this stuff, and automated and all these wonderful things that I do not understand. But that's the point, is that he's kind of that guy that can do the things that I can't do. And it was the same way back in 2013, 14, when Strategic Coach were banging on to me. And that's how it felt at the time. You need to take on a PA. And I'm thinking, well, PA is something posh people have. You know, it's like, that's not a PA, you know, really. You think you're that smart. And they were, so you need to do this, need to do this, need to do this. And it's single-handedly the best hire I've ever made, because suddenly I had someone that was doing all the stuff that I could do, but I shouldn't do.
Yeah.
I could delegate it somewhere else and somebody else. And she's still with me to this day.
Wow.
And it's brilliant. You know, she helps make my diary make sense and, you know, gets things like this all booked in, you know, all the things that I'm not always there to do.
Yeah.
So that the idea is that, we have another expression, there's lots of expressions coming out about unique ability as strategic coach, which is, if you had everything stripped away from you, what are the things that you would want to do all day long? In other words, they don't really feel like work, but to other people, it probably feels like it would be. And we should be spending more time working in that unique ability. So for me, it's doing things like the radio, doing things like podcasts. I love this. Sitting in front of a client, especially new ones, all that stuff. Anything else that isn't me doing that should be done really by somebody else, because there's somebody else that loves all the jobs like the spreadsheets that I can't stand.
Yeah.
So why am I going to put those down there? And we all have the things on our desk maybe that we put to one side. If you're putting it to one side to put it off, that's probably a fair sign that you should probably delegate it, because you don't really want to do it, or you haven't got the natural aptitude to do it, and it's a grind. So if you can really delegate everything apart from unique ability every day, I mean, I think the definite, people often say, well, what's the definition of success, David? I always think, waking up on a Monday morning, and feeling excited about what's going to happen this week instead of, oh, got this. You know, I used to have those feelings on a Sunday evening. I remember it from school, you know, yeah. back to school.
The dread.
Yeah, and it felt like someone had put chains around you and dragging you back in. But if you can actually get up in the morning and be excited about the day and what's to come, that's a large part of success, I would say. And if you do enough of the right stuff, the money follows, you know. It's really quite simple.
Yeah, I love that. And I think we maybe need just to backtrack a bit here, don't we? Because you've used this word strategic coach a few times. And I said, and you mentioned this, you know, the excitement we had on our call when we did the pre-call for this, because I thought we were going to be talking about something else when you first came into this. And we were talking about this business called Citrus Financial and what you did there, which is a great business. What I realized, that's the catalyst. That's the thing that got you into strategic coach. That's the thing that got you where you are. And for listeners or viewers, if you're watching this on YouTube later, the surprise I had was because I am now a client of Strategic Coach, but I didn't know David before that.
No, and I didn't know you either. And that was the funny thing, because we started talking about this, didn't we? And it was like, what? And it was a real, wish we could have got it on video, because it was hilarious at the time.
It was great. And I think the thing is, you know, I look at back Strategic Coach, and I'm going to ask you just to explain what it is in a minute, but I'm surrounded by books from Strategic Coach here, and I'm going to share a few of those in a minute. But I looked at Strategic Coach back in 2019. I was part of another business from 2010 till 2017, where I was a partner in that business, but it was my own business still. 2017, I came out of that business and was just looking for other things to make my business more successful. Hmm. And I came across Strategic Coach because somebody kept on sending me emails, and I kept on picking up these books and seeing stuff. And I picked up a book by Dan Sullivan, which I have still got on the bookshelf here. And it's about the question, the best question. I can't remember the title at this stage.
It's called the Dan Sullivan question, or it's also called the R Factor question. There's two, it's the same thing. But the book, I've actually got it up on my bookshelf up there. So yeah, it's called the Dan Sullivan question.
That's it. And I've got that question, that book, and I'm gonna grab it in a minute. Because I remember getting it, and I remember going to an event in London in 2018, 2019, and was mulling over Strategic Coach. And of course, took time over it because other things were working, and then COVID happened. Mm. And during the COVID time, I me and my friend Dom Monkhouse. We got talking, and Dom joined up with this thing called Strategic Coach. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I looked at that a few years ago. And Dom is now part of Strategic Coach, and he goes across to LA. He chose the LA route because he feels it's warmer over there and got some great contacts. He loves the coach over there. Yep. Meets up with some people we meet with. And then my friend Carolyn Lanzarotti, he joined up with Strategic Coach. So between us, we've all joined up with Strategic Coach. And we've done it for a reason, because we see the benefits from it. You know, we are all coaches. We are all business coaches doing what we do. We're all helping other organizations develop. Hmm. But we also realize we need to coach ourselves. Otherwise, it's a bit of a cobbler's shoes and a physician heal thyself. And that's why we've done it. So that's my journey into Strategic Coach. But let's reframe the question. What is Strategic Coach?
So Strategic Coach is a big international company. It started in Toronto by Dan Sullivan, who you mentioned, and his wife Babs. And he used to do one-to-one coaching for entrepreneurs, and then it became one-to-group and then one-to-many, and then it started growing from there. So a strategic coach is it's a program. It's you go once a quarter to a workshop in person, and you could do LA if you want to be really cool, or it's London, or there's various Toronto, Chicago. There's various places you can actually go to an in-person workshop. But what I would describe is, it's like coming back to what I was saying before, it's about looking at your business and just stopping to pause for a bit. So I have an expression that almost everything will work for a while if you unplug it. So is it the same as anything? It's like, have you unplugged it and switch it on and off again? And I think the same is true of us. And so often we can get caught up in the day-to-day, the nitty-gritty, and we're always running at 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. And in the coaching groups that I have, there's a program on Netflix called Drive to Survive, which is all about Formula One and about, but it's less so much about the race. It's about what happens behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So I have a thing that I think the races are actually won in the pits, not necessarily on the track. If it wasn't for the people actually taking the time out to do the development of the cars and getting the best out of the drivers and to have fine tuning going on, that when they're in the race. So for me, Strategic Coach, being in that workshop room, and there'd be about anywhere so 20 to 40, 50 people in there, it's a group of like-minded people that come together. And to me, the definition of a community is a group of people that agree to grow kind of thing.
Oh, I love that.
So we're all there in the room, and there is a coach at the front of the room. It might be me, it could be whoever in LA. And there, if you like, trying to conduct and get you thinking about things. So you'll do exercises, and it is a bit old school, some people think, but you're sitting there and you actually write out and you'll do some thinking about things and some sharing. But all the people in the room are just like you. So I often think, if you, particularly if you have a staff, if you have a team of people, then, you know, my team can come to me because the buck stops with David, right?
Yeah.
Who does David go to?
Yeah, you're at the top.
Can't necessarily show that you're not weak, but ask for help. It's not so easy. But in a room with people at Strategic Coach, and we have literally every sort of background. Yes, there's financial services people there like me. You've got knee surgeons, dog trainers. I'm trying to think of who else is in. I've got other coaches do actually come a lot. Gym owners. A whole mess of people, marketing people, people that are accounts people, anything. It doesn't matter what their background is, but they can come together once a quarter, just sit and go, right, I'm going to do some thinking about my business. And coming back to what I was saying earlier, when a lot of people start their companies or businesses off, they'll often sit down and write a business plan and they go, right, okay, this is what it's going to look like. But when you actually start going, how many people actually stop to sit and think about their businesses from that point on?
Yeah.
And they often call it, this phrase, organic growth. We've had a lot of organic growth. Oh, you mean it's just happened? Yeah. There's no direction. It's just sort of happened. That to me is organic. Well, what about if you actually designed it a little bit more and thought about, well, what's working in your business, what isn't?
Yeah.
And being able to bounce those ideas off people in a room that are just like you. And I love it. I feel it's like coming away and having a bit of oxygen and then coming back. Then you kind of hit the ground running when you're in your business. But also the people that are coaching in Strategic Coach are all business owners.
Yeah.
So we're all out there. So we haven't been trained to be a coach. I've been in the coach program myself, and I'm still in the coach program since 2009. And it's only in the last 5 years I've been a coach for them.
Okay.
You've got to kind of walk the talk, you know, you can't. So I know when I'm up there talking about some of the tools that we're going to go through, and I think I've done them, I've been through this, I've used them, and I've seen how it works and the impact that it's had. So therefore you're coming from a position of, it's different when you've actually walked the talk. That's the thing. Instead of, right, well, we're going to put you on a program to become a coach and then you start coaching. It's like, well, it feels a bit disingenuous.
Yeah.
I'd rather be coached. And that was one of the things why I joined. And similar story to you, I saw them at a conference, back in mid-2000s. And I actually had my original presentation, which I've got somewhere, I have to dig it out actually, is on cassette.
Wow,
so I got given a cassette from Dan Sullivan all about this program. And I remember thinking at the time, well, that's something that major successful people do. And I remember coming into the room first time, and I joined up because, a bit like you, somebody else that I knew was going to do it. And I thought, if you do it, I'll do it, and I'll do it, you do it. And I went in there, I thought, I'm going to give it a year because I'm super skeptical. It's an investment of money to do this. I'm going to give this a year because I've been looking at this program so often. And if I'm wrong, I'll stop after a year, but at least then I can put it to bed and go, I tried it, it wasn't for me. And I remember being in this room and just feeling like so small. I thought, I don't deserve to be there.
Wow.
And I've reflected on this quite a lot since. And I now think that actually, I think people call it imposter syndrome. But when you're in a room full of people and you feel like you have imposter syndrome, in that you feel that, I think you're in the right room. Because you're in a room for people that can help you raise your game. And I was talking to my son about this the other day. He was asked to move up a set in maths. So he said, I'm in the middle set at the moment. I've been asked if I want to go up to the top set. I'm like, okay. And he said, I'm a bit nervous about it. And then he asked, I said, here's the thing. I said, if you go up there, what you're doing is you're raising your idea of normal. I said, where you are now feels comfortable. You have to be uncomfortable a little bit to get used to this new level, and it will become comfortable again. But you imagine if you're going to be doing the exams, whether you're in the middle set or the top set of maths, the exam paper you're going to turn over on the day you're going to do the exam is going to be the same.
Yeah.
But how is your confidence going to be knowing that you're coming out from a place of, I've been in the top set, and you're learning at this level with people that are there? And it's about being, I don't know the expression, about balcony people. And you want to be in a room full of people that lift you up rather than the basement people that are trying to drag you down to their level.
Yeah, I love that as an analogy. I mean, I just think, you know, from a sports point of view, that could apply from an academic point of view, from a business point of view. I was in a room recently and we were talking about one of Dan Sullivan's books. And for viewers, we will be able to show it now because I've just got it in a book here, The Gap and the Game.
Yep.
And someone said the realization for them was they never felt like an entrepreneur. And they were asked the question, why don't you feel like an entrepreneur? Because in my mind, an entrepreneur is Gary Vee or Richard Branson or Steve Jobs. And I don't feel like that. Mm. And someone said, just look at where you're guiding yourself. You're thinking about the level. But when you set up your pitching of this view, but think about where you've got to now. And I think there's a really interesting analogy there, or parallel, I should say, between you're talking about, you know, your son being pushed up into that top set. So he now sees himself in that world. But he's been good at maths before, so he was doing well. But if he was aspiring to be up there like those, he might think, oh, I can never get to that level. But he's now had someone give him that balcony person to lift him up.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting when you say that, because, you know, often people do hold themselves back because of that and that imposter syndrome. I'm not good enough to be in that room. But what I heard you say is you realize actually that was a good right place to be because it lifted you up.
Yeah, 100%. And it just felt really uncomfortable. I remember thinking, coach at the time, who still coaches me, thinking, don't come to me. I haven't got anything interesting to add to this. Don't ask me for my thoughts or anything, because I'm just like, oh, just I so want to be under the radar. And I can still picture it now. And I remember exactly where I was. And I remember where in the room I was sitting, everything. And the same thing happened actually when I went to, just remembered this, I joined the 10 Times program, which is then where you get coached by Dan Sullivan. So okay. I go to Toronto once a quarter. To be coached by Dan at the time. And I remember being in the room with Dan Sullivan and the same feeling, all these people. And I'm like, I do not belong in here. And I remember the girls, because they know me quite well, some of the girls that work there now, and coming up to me saying, if you could have shrunk into that wall anymore and looked away from Dan, you would have done, wouldn't you? I went, yeah. Wow. I said, please. She said, we looked at you and thought, he's so uncomfortable. I said, yep. That's me. But that was the point where I knew I was in the right room again.
Yeah, because I love that.
It's like, oh, I don't want to do, you know, it's like when somebody says to you, oh, do you want to do this? And you want to say no, but yes comes out. You know, it's that.
It's the opposite.
It's that thing. And it is about being uncomfortable to reach your new level of comfort. And it's fun. But, you know, the thing is, no one has to do any of this stuff. But, you know, it's about anything. If you want to do things like, if we go to the gym and we talk about fitness and so on, you're probably better off or being more motivated if you've got someone that's a personal trainer who's looking over you saying, do this, try this, do this. Your results will probably be quicker and more measurable and everything else that you want, rather than maybe you thinking about doing it yourself or wondering if you're doing the right thing. Yeah, it's nice having an ally and somebody that's the, I would say, your critical friend.
Yeah.
So somebody who's on your side, but actually will tell you probably the truth that you need to hear.
Yeah.
And certainly I feel it now in the room of the people that I'm coaching, is that I want to make sure that they're all, everyone's welcome. So yeah, the whole, everyone's inclusive. So you always get these characters. There's people that are quieter and there are people in the room that, I remember one, we have somebody who is frightened of microphones, strangely. So I know to be careful around that. So I want to make sure that everybody feels included and comes away having a good, positive experience. But it's the people in the room that make it.
Yeah.
I'm just the guy at the front giving the tools to give you the thinking to then go away and then talk about and then think on and make that impact later on. So it's a big privilege. It really is to get and people share things with you. And I feel what a privilege that is to be part of these people's lives like this. And I'm still being coached, you know, and I love it. The growth would not have been like that were it not for that. And to give the example you said about, I've got the two other businesses.
Yeah.
Because in the room, actually, a lot of people do have more than one business going on. So that became my new normal. So when I saw an opportunity that came up, that actually, it was like, actually, I could do this. Dan Sullivan's got a great quote that your eyes only see and your ears only hear what your brain's looking for. If you don't tell it what to look for, what do you know?
Never can find it.
People in the room, where I've got this company, I've got this set up. And I thought, You can have more than one. I know it sounds daft, but you can have more than one company. So when opportunities presented themselves to do something, it was more, yeah, of course I can do that. It was more of a can do rather than, oh, yeah, I'm not sure I can, so therefore I won't type of thing. I was more open to the idea of expanding my world rather than contracting it, I suppose, or staying still.
Yeah, so, I love that. I love that thing about expanding versus contracting. Now we said we would do this as a too short a podcast to give people time to listen, and we're
throwing that completely out the window.
We have gone out the window, but I'm going to say let's bring this one to a close. Let's do it again because I think there's another message. I've got a whole bank of questions here, so if you've got time, I'd love to pick up again on the other side. But there's one question I want to finish this one with, and this is the question, which is, if you could go back and tap the young David, little David on the shoulder, and give him one piece of advice from the future, what would it be?
Take more risks.
Oh, take more risks.
Take more risks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because so many opportunities that have been around are normally a result of taking a risk, but often we don't because we're frightened of failure or whatever. So, saying yes more often when you want to say no, just taking those risks. Because you know what? A lot of things pay off a lot more than you think they will. So, was I nervous about setting up another company thinking, oh, will it work? Just go for it and we'll figure it out. You know, it's like throwing yourself up a plane and building the wings on the way down. You know, it's like sometimes you've just got to do it and go for it. But it works out more often, more positively than what you think. But, you know, you mentioned earlier on about people thinking they're not an entrepreneur, and you cited Richard Branson. He's had lots of businesses fail. Steve Jobs. He left Apple. We got pushed out of Apple, then had to get back in.
Yeah.
So actually, a lot of the successful people have come as a result of maybe some failures, and they've made them who they are. I think that for anybody to, I think it makes a more interesting story as well. If you're talking to somebody who has their own business, how'd it go? Well, I set it up and it's been successful. Well, that's a bit boring.
Smooth sailing all the way.
Yeah. Oh, it's no problems at all. All you want to hear about is, so what did you have to go through to get to where you did, and what's the stories that you've got, and what's the learnings and the teachings that you have?
Yeah.
What are the battle scars that you've had on your journey? And that makes it far more of a compelling, interesting person, I think, than somebody. And if they say it's plain sailing, they're lying.
They've been upset. Yeah, they've forgotten those. I think that's really interesting, isn't it? Yeah, the plain sailing doesn't happen in reality. There's lots of things, you know. You joined Strategic Coach in 2009. You've been through. Sorry, no. You've seen this journey. You've seen it evolving. You've joined that in mid recession. You set up your financial business. There's been ups and downs. It's just the economy. You know, nothing's plain sailing. So I love that thing. Take more risks. I'm going to draw us to a close there on this first episode, because I think there's a good message that people need to take away there. And that message to me is around the value that Strategic Coach brought to you, around giving the ability to realize you needed a self-managing company. You know, I've still got that picture of your dad on the golf course shaking his head and probably feeling a bit sorry for you in some ways as well, thinking, I wish I could have given him some more information. And that relates back to me. And I think there's a big message there. I think the story I also hear there about, you know, understanding your unique ability, understand what David's really good at. And actually, when you said hiring your first PA, and you thought PAs are just for other people, but actually you realized that was the best move you've made, and she's still with you today. And I think that's an amazing story. And the other word that jumped out at me, you said about the word scary hire, you said COO. You know, how often do people not hire because they're scared, because they don't want to take the risk? What if it failed?
Yeah.
The answer I say is, what if you don't hire and you stick like this in a year's time? When we're having this conversation in a year's time, you've done nothing about it.
Yeah.
That's 100%.
Yeah. The scary hire is take more risks. You know, it's a scary hire. And, you know, I always talk to people when they're talking about hiring somebody, and they always say, oh, yes, it's, you know, the salary is X a year and everything. I said, no, it isn't. It's only, you divide it by 12, you're only paying them monthly. If it doesn't work out after 3 months, you've just got to move on. You just say, I'm sorry, it's not worked out, and you can move them on. Yeah. But you'd be surprised what people can do with the right hire. Fundamentally, I was listening to a podcast by Stephen Bartlett recently, who's on Dragon's Den, which is like the Shark Tank thing over here. And he was talking about how the right hires can fundamentally shift your business. And that was his biggest business lesson, was always hire the right people. Yeah. They know things that you don't know. They can do things that you can't do. And they can propel your business in a way that you can't imagine if you just have the right people around you. You know, we're not the island. We want to be the all thing, but actually we're not. So we need to let go to grow. I often say, you know, you've got to let go to grow. So, you know, find the right people to let go to. And that's the key, is the right people to let go to. don't just give it to somebody and hope it works and then get frustrated when it doesn't. Yeah, you know, there's right ways of doing it.
I think that's brilliant, actually. Look, David, it's been fascinating first conversation. I'm looking forward to continuing in that case. But for listeners now, we're going to close up now, and I look forward to seeing you on the other side for the second half of this conversation. So, David Braithwaite, thank you for being a guest on the Sparks Baking
Thank you for having me. And I always know it's been a great conversation. Where's the time gone? So it's flown. So really good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks, David. There's so much I've taken from that conversation with David. I'm looking forward to part two, because the key is it's around building your life the way you want it, creating a plan for where you want to be, not just letting life happen to you. And I think when David talked about some of the things about freedom of time, freedom of money, freedom of relationships, and freedom of purpose, it struck me, because when I set up my business in 2004, I wanted that freedom of time and freedom of relationships, but I didn't really know how to get it. I just wanted to build a business. So I think if you're out there listening to this podcast now and you're stuck, come and talk to us. Talk about what we can do to help you, whether that's strategic coach or with me and my business, because actually we're here to help. We don't put these podcasts out particularly to sell, but we want people to pick up the messages that they're in there to say, okay, what is it you can do to make a change in your life? Because we believe when you're building a business on purpose, you're creating a life for yourself, and that life for yourself will build a better world for the people you work with, the people you live with, the community you're in, and that ultimately impacts the world. So I can't hold you accountable, as I always say, but what I can do is give you the tools to hold yourself accountable. Enjoy what you've just listened to. And if you do have questions, drop me a note. It's phil@igniumconsult.com.
Thanks again for listening to the Sparks by Ignium podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe, tell a friend about this episode, and send us in your suggestions for guests who might offer valuable insights the rest of us can learn from. Reach out to us at any time. Details are on our website, www.igniumconsult.com. See you next time.